Where's my pen? I want a good pen to hold. I don't like the feel of this pen.
I gotta get a good one too.
Too slippery.
This one's more of a marker.
Markers are no good.
New pen. Transparency pen? What is a transparency pen?
It'll always like level with you.
Like an overhead projector or something? This is weird. Why do I have a pen for an overhead projector? I don't know. I don't know which year this marker came from, but I...
Who's been giving a lecture in the 1970s in your basement?
One of those overhead projectors has like a ashtray hanging off the side of it. These are the pens they give you in like the old bowling alleys. That's what this is.
That is what that is. You steal a bowling alley pen?
Maybe.
That seems right.
You know what? I think a lot of things went off the rails in this country whenever we went to this automatic scoring in the bowling alleys.
Oh, boy. Here we go again.
If
I had a nickel for every time you blamed the whole fall of society on when we went away from we went away to automatic scoring on bowling, I'd have $1 million.
I remember what life was like before then.
Mm-hmm.
It was better.
No, you had to do so much math.
I lived with my mom. She cooked all my food.
That's true.
She bought me shoes. It's very nice back then. Now I have to buy my own shoes. My mom only makes me dinner once or twice a year.
Uh-huh. But you don't have to remember bowling math.
True.
It was the hardest of all math.
Why was it so much harder than other math?
I don't know. It's impossible. I would rather take a whole semester of calculus than do one round of bowling math.
I was really confident with the bowling math, and then you get to the 10th frame. And then all the bowling math just goes out the window. They're like, you know what?
Yeah,
all this complicated bowling math, we're going to simplify parts of it, but other parts of it, much more complicated.
It's like you get to the end of a road, and suddenly it's like, now the road is in seven different dimensions. Good luck.
Before it was left and right. Now it's forward, back, stop, go. Still left and right.
Time, somehow. Well, hey, everybody. Welcome to Is This a Ghost?
The bowling podcast.
It's a brand new bowling podcast.
For dorks and old dorks.
The only bowling podcast for old dorks by old dorks. I'm Clayton Smith, and every week I tell a real ghost story from real history to my real friend, Patrick Dean, who doesn't take it real seriously. Can you fill some time where I Google something really quickly?
Sure. Yeah, is it about bowling transparencies? Because I have a few that I could bring out.
In a sense, it is, because
first
I'm Googling
time I ever bowled
100,
I got that one in there.
Okay.
First time ever bowled 110. I got that one. End of list.
Okay. I'm going to need a few more, like 30 more seconds.
Okay. You know I can't do that.
All right. I'm just going to leave this tab open then.
You should.
I'm going to see if we can find a bowling alley ghost.
Okay.
It'll be fun.
Has to be.
I think.
Did I ever tell you a story about one of my old bosses? How he used to be a pin monkey? I tell you a story?
I don't know, man. We just talked so much over the last several decades.
If I've told the story before, Jenny can just cut it out, or Jeremy, or somebody can cut it out. I don't really care. A buddy of mine, well, he was a boss at the time. He was telling me a story when he got out of, I think it was when he was considering going to college. For a year, he was a pin monkey, right? Except he would do like overnight maintenance at bowling alleys.
I said, you know, we don't have any young listeners, but just in case one snuck through, can you explain what a pin monkey is?
Oh, I'm sorry. Boy, it's probably a little offensive if I don't tell the story. Pin monkey. So before the days of automated bowling pin placement machines, which I think were invented like the 1940s or something like that, 1930s maybe. Before then, you would literally have a small boy or girl that would sit back there at the end of the bowling lane collecting pins, and they would set them back up on the spots for you to throw your next ball. That child's profession was pin monkey, and they were paid handsomely for it.
I bet they were not.
So after the automated bowling machines require a surprising amount of maintenance. They are not the most efficient things in the world. And my old supervisor...
The children keep dying?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It just chews them up. So the automated machines need a lot of people working on them, and one of my old supervisors was an overnight bowling alley maintenance technician. He would go in the middle of the night, and he would fix the things that were busted, and you know, do the you know, routine maintenance. Part of what he had to do involved some sort of like epoxy, some sort of like crazy glue thing that he had to use to fasten some parts back together. And so he was reattaching something on like the main drive wheel of one of the lanes. So it was like this enormous wheel that, you know, that picks up the pins from the bottom and takes them back up to the top. And this is like 2 o'clock in the morning, something like that. He's working on all this sort of stuff. And he's putting the epoxy on the parts, whatever, and he's got everything put back together. And then he goes to rest his hand. You know, he leans to, you know, just take a break for a second. And when he goes to pull his hand away, he realizes he has epoxied his hand to the main drive wheel of one of the lanes.
Now, epoxy, that's pretty strong stuff.
It is literally like what they used to hold the space shuttle together. So he is now stuck to it. And it's not just like a piece of clothing that's stuck to it that he can take off. His hand is stuck to this huge wheel. And he cannot, from his position, he cannot reach any of the like emergency stops or like disable interlocks, anything like that. He has the whole system turned off, obviously, because he's working on it. But he is glued.
Someone's going to come in there and turn it on.
So he, this is like 2 o'clock in the morning, something like that. This is before cell phones. This is like in late 80s, early 90s. He is racking his brain to try and remember what time this bowling alley opens. Because he does have a watch on him. He knows what time it is. But the bowling alley is completely dark. And he doesn't remember whether they open at 7 or maybe 8 or maybe 9. Because he needs to save his energy for whenever somebody comes in and he starts screaming, you know, bloodthirst, you know, just a blood-curdling scream so people don't, you know, flip on the machinery. Because his fear was the moment somebody walks in the door, hungover, you know, sleepy, they're going to flip on the lights, they're going to walk over, they're going to flip on the main equipment enabled, and he is going to be pulled through the machine like a 9-year-old pin monkey. And that'll be the end of him. So at 7, 8 o'clock in the morning, whatever, he hears some sort of a noise, like a car pulling up. Here's a door slam. Here's someone, you know, enter through the main door into the bowling alley. And as soon as he hears that, he just starts screaming at the top of his lungs, "Do not turn anything on! Do not turn anything on!" And just repeats it and repeats it and repeats it until eventually someone climbs back there and is like, "Oh my God. Mike, what the fuck are you doing back here?" So.
Well, that is horrifying.
Yes.
Jesus Christ.
Such is the life of a pin monkey.
That's true. It's true. It's high stakes, but high rewards also. Mm-hmm. Get free bowling games, I bet.
I would imagine. I mean, it has to be after everyone's already left.
Sure, I mean, of course. It's got to be
once you wash your hands, obviously. My God.
Gross. Well, we're back. And I'm sure that Jeremy's edited all this together in a way that
makes perfect sense. I bet it sounds beautiful. I bet it sounds like angels harmonizing.
I bet it's Sistine Chapel. When you look at the Sistine Chapel and you hear the music in your head, that's the same music that's playing right now in your head when we do this.
I bet Jeremy clicked the play button, and then I bet he went and ate dinner. And then he came back and he clicked the stop button. That's what I figured happened.
And he said, "This is edited.
This is fine."
And that's, and we don't pay him.
No, so that is exactly what we deserve.
Well, we are back. I got to say, just today, I listened to the first half, most of the first half of the Bugsy Siegel story, the finished version.
Mm-hmm. Was that a two-parter about. Or is that a one-parter?
This tonight we're doing more.
Oh,
I found more in the vault.
Oh, this is the second part then.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so the first part was okay.
Yeah, I thought so.
Second part was good. What I actually wanted to say is I said the wrong episode. What I actually wanted to say is I finally listened to the Halloween episode.
Oh,
I'm so tired. I listened to the Halloween episode, as has everyone else in the world now, and you son of a gun, I didn't catch it at the time. Hmm. You snuck in a train derailment story.
I did, didn't I?
You snuck in a train disaster of the 19th century.
I was going to segue into an entirely different podcast halfway through.
Uh-huh.
You give me the reins for a few moments, and...
I can't close my eyes around you for 30 seconds.
How many drinks did you have that it took you 2.5 weeks to remember what the third story was?
I was so wrapped up in trying to get it right. And then I don't listen to this podcast.
I
don't.
I get it. I get it.
But yeah, I did. And you did it. So I don't know. There's a future, I think. You're right. Mm-hmm. There's a future in train disasters of the 19th century. So that was fun. I also have an update on my life. So last week you told the story about how June had to get a flu vaccine, and you also got a flu vaccine.
Mm-hmm. Neither of us liked it.
Yeah, and that your story got it spun up because you the Walgreens really fucked you.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Right. The yes. first day.
Yep.
So I now went to the doctor last week, and because I have tendonitis in my knee.
Okay.
And some people have been like, "Well, how did that happen?
Is it fatal?"
It might be.
Oh, okay.
It hasn't been yet, but I'm not ruling anything out. I woke up older than I went to bed, and my knee, I couldn't walk.
That's daylight savings, though, so we all did. But
yeah, but this was a week ago. This
has been last week. Before daylight savings. Okay.
Yeah. It was a little sore last time we recorded, but it wasn't too bad. And then the day after we recorded, I could not go like up or down stairs, and I could barely walk.
I'm like that some nights after we record too. I really am.
It's really intense.
Amy's gonna drag you back up the stairs. What have you been
and
doing?
You're so
down here?
Wet. So
don't let the cats see. I want them to respect me still.
Protect our baby boy's innocence. So I go to the doctor on, I guess it was on Wednesday, and she's looking at it, and she's like, I think it's just kind of, you're just kind of getting to that age where you start getting tendonitis and can't walk for a week. And I was like, all right. So anyway, side note, she did say while you're there, she's like, while you're here, do you want a flu shot? And I was like, oh yeah, great idea. And she's like, oh, really? And I say, yeah. And she goes, great. I was like, okay. And so once she finished up her thing, she came left, and then the nurse technician whatever came in, and she was like, "I hear you're getting a flu shot," and I said, "Yeah." She goes, "That's great," and then she left to go get the flu stuff, and she's like, "Love it when people get flu shots. I love it."
Did she need like a second confirmation? Like the doc, the doc came in and said you're getting a flu shot, but I had to see it in your face.
But you didn't look like an idiot when you walked in here, so I don't know. So I get the flu shot, and it's fine, and then I'm walking out, I'm checking out. And the woman is checking me out. It's like, oh, and you got a flu shot. Great. And I'm like, what is going on? Is it that rare that people are like, oh, yeah, I guess I will. Surprise me with a flu shot. Yeah. That sounds like a good idea. Everyone was so pleasantly shocked. Anyway, so that's not the point of the story. So I'm there, and they prescribed me two things for my knee. One is like this big capsule of ibuprofen.
Uh-huh, right.
You have to eat like a cake.
Yeah, you know they sell that at the store too, right?
No, this is the big. This is a big. This is the.
Yeah,
big
no, one. I know the big one's made of little ones, though. Just so you're aware.
No. This was a big one. It's super packed. It's 800 milligrams per guy. So they don't give that one to just anybody. So I get that, and then the other prescription they gave me is a topical version, a gel version of that, where I could just rub it on my knee.
Really?
And then it'll and just you, localize.
And you can do both. They let you do both.
She advised against that.
Right,
but she gave me the power to make my own choice, and so I was like, "Well, this is great because obviously like, the big one, you eat it like a cake, and then it makes your whole body ibuprofed. But if you just do it on the knee and you rub it in, then it's just localized to your knee, and then the rest of you, then you don't have a stroke or whatever.
Sure,
I don't know how medicine works.
I'm not reading all this paper,
but I like the idea of the gel and you rub it on because then it's localized. So anyway, so it doesn't matter. So I call in the Walgreens and they get my prescription and then they tell me it's ready. So I go to pick it up like an hour later and they have the pills, but they don't have the gel.
The cream. Yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I really need the gel. Mm-hmm. Don't call it a cream. That makes it sound weird. Yeah. It's gel.
Yeah.
It's gel. It's man gel.
Just a little tub of cream. That's all I'm looking for here.
No, it's manly gel in a big man tube. Mm-hmm. And the guy, but he's like, we don't have that right now. It'll be in tomorrow.
Oof.
And I was like, oh man, I'm really in a lot of pain. Are you sure you don't have some man gel back there? He's like, no.
Maybe just like a little specimen container that might have a little bit of gel in it.
Think you can help me out, buddy?
Special
know what I mean?
Guy. Mm-hmm.
So I leave and I'm like, it sucks because it hurts really bad. And then I call them the next day and I was like, yeah, I just want to check and see my prescription.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, not yet. It'll be ready. We'll call you when it's ready.
They stop calling. Call. Yeah. Stop calling.
Yeah, please stop calling. We're Walgreens. Shut up. So then 2 days pass and they've not called. And so on Friday afternoon, I call them and I was like, look, I just checking on this prescription again. It was supposed to be here, 2 days ago and then yesterday, like, what's going on? And she's like, all right, what's your name? What's your date of birth? Boop, boop, boop. She types it in. And she goes, well, we have the ibuprofen prescription that you picked up. And I said, yeah. And then there's another one. She goes, no, we don't have another one for you. And I said, oh, yes, you do, because I'm looking at the Walgreens app and it says the name of it, and here it is. And she's like, no, I think you're mistaken. And I said, I assure you, ma'am, I'm not mistaken. Once again, I'm looking at your app.
I'm not the author of the app.
And your system, and it shows me two prescriptions. It says one has been picked up and one is currently being filled. Mm-hmm. And here's the details. And she says, that's not right. And I said, well, you're going to need to make it right. And so I got very upset because I was in a lot of pain. And she's like, well, someone's going to have to call your doctor to get the prescription sent back over here. And I said, which one of us do you think should do that? And she said, oh, do you want me to do that? And I said, if you could, that'd be great. Yeah. So she's like, okay, we'll see what we can do. So she hangs up. So I call my doctor, and then I'm like, because they're not going to do it. They're Walgreens. Yes. The bumbling idiots of the pharmacy world. And so I call my doctor, and I talk to the nurse there, and I told her the situation. She's like, wait, they lost your prescription? And I said, I guess so. She's like, I mean, it's here. We sent it. It says confirmed to Walgreens. I don't know. I was like, oh, she just laughed. She goes, okay. She goes, you want us to send it back to Walgreens? And I said, no, not really. Yep. So can you just send it anywhere else? Just send it somewhere else. But then while I'm driving to the other pharmacy to get this prescription, this guy from Walgreens calls me, and he says, hello, this is, you know, Aldo from Walgreens, whatever. He goes, I helped you the other day, and I told you that your Joe was going to be late by a day. And I was like, yeah, oh, yeah, I remember that. Mm-hmm. I was there. And he said, yes, it's so strange. Somehow it got deleted from our system, but I remember it was there. And I was like, well, okay.
What a plot twist.
So this guy definitely deleted it. Yeah. And I was like, well, you know, okay. And he goes, I remember, just come on back, I'll give it to you. And I was like, so you do have it?
You are getting a specimen container. You absolutely are at this point.
Yeah.
Come on back. Don't come in the front, though. Not the front. We
go to the side door. Here, I'll give you a special knock.
Yeah, it's a special knock, and then we'll go to the woods. Because that's where I keep it.
Yeah. The doctor did not resend to that pharmacy, because I told them not to.
Right.
So he doesn't actually at this point have a prescription for it, but I do show up to see if he'll give it to me. And sure. He does. Huh. Here you go. Here's this prescription only medicine. That
give like a little squirt,
sure,
like a little squirt in the hands. Like, here's some for today. Hands out. Come back tomorrow for some more. Tomorrow.
Not too early. Yeah. I need a little bit of time. So that's good. And I used it once and it helped a little bit, and I didn't use it again after that.
Oh. Did you call Aldo back? Let him know?
It's like, I don't need any more Aldo stuff. You don't have to save up anymore. You can just let it rip, my dude. And so that's my story of Walgreens being just the worst. When did Walgreens become bad at stuff? They used to be pretty good at stuff.
It's kind of funny. There was a CVS, like across the street from the house, and, a Walgreens down the block. And, you know, they fought to the death, and CVS died, and everyone's like, oh, okay, well, I guess all the customers from CVS are going to go to Walgreens. Walgreens is going to have to, you know, step up their game and, you know, do whatever. And no, they like lost half their pharmacists, and now they're only open like 6 hours a week.
Great.
And that's it.
They don't have to be open more because they're the only game on that street.
Yeah.
And people will not go two streets over. Anyway, but I have a flu vaccine.
Cool.
So that felt good. You know what? It hurt a little bit, but it wasn't sore afterward.
Good for you.
I feel great.
Good for
I
you.
Feel great. No flu so far.
I don't know if I text you or not, but are you aware that you're looking at, you're interacting with, you're talking to the newest executive member at Costco? Did you know this?
I didn't even know you were being considered for membership.
That's
incredible.
We got the call Saturday night, and I flew up there.
Yeah, of course.
On wings of angels.
Yeah. Well, executive member.
Executive membership.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Now, isn't that what they call all their memberships?
No. It's what they call the highest class of their memberships.
I'm going to look up, because I'm not sure that's right. I think they call all of them the executive, and then the business one has
There's also
different.
Gold Star, which is beneath me. Gold Star is beneath me.
Yeah, okay. Let me see your card. Prove it. Hold it up.
It's upstairs. I'm not going to take the headphones
off. Yeah, okay.
Actually, I have a photo of it. I have a photo of me holding it.
Well, this is Photoshopped.
This is not Photoshopped. Let me find it. Uh-huh. Right. And bam, motherfucker.
You can't prove that's your hand.
That is my hand.
At all. That could be any hand. Look at those dumb fingers. That could be any dumb finger.
No.
That does look like your dumb forefinger. That's true. It's like those are my meat sausage.
My hands. Those are my children in the background weeping.
Because they're so proud of you?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
So that's exciting news for you. Wow.
Yeah.
How did this come about?
Well, Saturday night, the kids were so hungry that they were crying. And I said, well, your mother's been bothering me to get a Costco membership. Let's go up there and we'll eat.
I hear they have real cheap food.
And we'll get some real cheap food while you guys are, you know, sobbing and hungry. And so we went up there and I walked in. I had the little flyer, you know. I was like, and I walk in and there's an entrance and an exit. And I think, well.
Wait, have you been in the Costco before? You've
never,
been, right?
Never been to one before. Never been to one before.
Really?
So I walk in.
Have you been to a Sam's Club?
I've been to a Sam's Club before, but I've never been to a Costco. And it's really weird. The entrance, it looks almost like an ICE detention facility. It's chain link everywhere. I don't understand it.
Yeah.
I was like, okay.
You're in Missouri, so pretty soon it will be.
Yeah. So there's an entrance and an exit. And I think, well, I should probably go in the entrance. I know I'm not a member here, but if I walk in the exit and I'm not a member, I'm pretty sure they throw you in the hole at that point. I don't think they let you. Yeah. So I go
they're pretty serious.
I go in the entrance and the lady, there's a lady standing there. I said, I don't want any trouble. I'm not a member, but I'd like to, I want to be one. I want to become one. And she goes, okay, we need to go back out and go walk in the exit and the membership desk.
I said,
I said, are you sure? Cause the sign was pretty clear. Uh-huh. So I go up to the membership desk and I walk.
It makes no sense that the membership desk is behind the exit door. No sense whatsoever.
Yeah. There was no one in line for it. So I walk up and I set down the flyer that says executive members get a whatever gift card or something like that. I said, this is what I want. I want the black card. I want this one. And the guy goes, oh, let me tell you about all the benefits. I said, I don't want to know the benefits. I said, I want it. There's no higher level.
You don't have to sell me on anything. I'm here. Yeah. I'm here doing your job.
He goes, if you sign up for the lower tier, here's what you're missing. I said, I don't want to sign up for the lower tier. I want the higher. You don't have to do this. And I'm slowly realizing this is all this guy does. He gives a 15-minute spiel. This is all he does. So he gives me the whole spiel, and I get the photo taken, whatever. We walk over, and you know, everyone's crying. I'm crying. I'm so hungry. So I ordered June the hot dog. I said, Gloria, what like insanely cheap thing do you want? She goes, I would like the panini. I said, they have paninis? What the fuck are you talking about? Sure enough, they have paninis.
Huh.
And I was like, I like pizza. I would like a, so I was like, oh.
A whole pizza.
Well, so on the photo, like on the kiosk, it's a photo of like a little piece of pizza. I was like, well, that's not enough. So I hit it twice. I need two of those.
Yeah.
And that was a problem because each one of those pieces of pizza is a third of a pizza.
They are so big.
It is a hubcap size piece of pizza. And my dumbass ordered two of them.
That's exciting.
And a chocolate shake. So after we ate all of that and threw up in the parking lot, then we came back in and we bought, I don't worry, but we bought like just frozen grilled cheese sandwiches or something. Yeah, I know. Wow. But yeah. So anyway, just in case I'm not here next week, just know
I've been doing a ribbon cutting or something.
Some sort of executive responsibility. I don't know.
Board meetings could happen anytime.
They told me just to have my phone on all the time.
Constantly.
I said, okay, I can do that.
All right. Nice. Okay. It was good to know. Thank you for telling me. So we've had a Costco subscription for years and years and years. Mm-hmm. And because in Berwyn, outside of Chicago, we lived like 5 minutes from one.
Oh.
And so it was like almost like a grocery store. We went there a lot.
I mean, 5 minutes is literally in the parking lot. So you're pretty close.
Yeah. Yep. So we lived very close. And so we'd go there a lot. And admittedly, like we probably should have had, we've spent definitely enough to have executive level and have it make sense. Cause you get like cash back. Or
yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yes. And the card, the black card.
They didn't, but no one ever asked us. And I never care about it. Cause we got two little kids. And I just, you know, we're just like trying to wrangle kids in carts and stuff and no one's bringing it up. And I'm not going to do the work to put in.
Right.
But it's figure out how the math to figure out like if I should get an executive Costco card. I'm an adult with real things to do. And so we never bothered it. But then after we moved to Virginia, then now we go to Costco like once every 2 months. We get to drive to Charlottesville or Harrison. It's like 30 minutes. And so we go much more rarely. And now we no longer spend enough every year to make it worthwhile. Mm. Except now that we're here, every fucking time we go, the cashier is like, hey, by the way, have you thought about upgrading to executive? And then they go on this whole thing. We're like, here's the thing. And it's this and it's this. And they talk so fast and I can't tell them, hey, stop. I already heard all this. I don't want it because it doesn't make any sense. They're like, we're looking at your history and this, and you spend this much money, blah, blah, blah. And I don't have the energy or the will to explain to them like that. That's not the situation anymore. Right. And we moved and stuff. And they keep doing it. And I keep just telling, oh, no, thanks. Oh, no, thanks. No, thanks. Mm-hmm. 7 times in a row. And so finally, this woman, who seemed very nice, she's checking us out. And she goes, oh, she like calls someone on her little phone or on her radio. She's like, boop, boop, boop. Mm-hmm. And she does her thing. And then this woman comes like right over. Is like, oh, did you know? And I said, stop. I said, I don't care what you have to do. Put it in your system. I never, ever want anyone to ask me ever again if I want to be an executive membership. I've done the math. It doesn't work. And I swear to God, if one more person asks me if I want to upgrade to executive, I am never coming back here and I'm going to lose my absolute mind.
And I'm sure that lady was like, I'm just here to see if you want a flu shot.
And I would have taken one. I'll say, since then, no more. No more asks if I want to go to executive. And now that I don't have it, I kind of want it. I kind of want executive. Now they're never going to ask me again. I'm sure I'm on some blacklist now where I cannot have, they won't allow me to have executive. I got to be a real gold star member for the rest of my life.
That's a shame.
Mm-hmm. Can you bring this up at the board meeting? Tell them I want to be considered for membership now.
If you can type out your last name in the chat so I can bring it, I'd appreciate it.
God damn it. Oh, you're not the same. You're not the same since you became an executive.
Nope.
All right. Well, that's plenty of time wasted today. Do you want to hear a ghost story?
Do we have time?
You know what? Maybe we should do this next week.
Yeah, why not?
How much time have we killed? Oh, yeah. People are getting real mad at us. Let's do a ghost story.
Dong!
All right. We are still talking about our friend Bugsy Siegel. And just to remind you of where we left off last time. So Bugsy's big mafia guy. Mm-hmm. He's mad as a bedbug, which we decided is not a slur. And I hope that's true. And what are we talking about? Murder Inc. As part of the National Crime Syndicate and all this stuff. And so anyway, Bugsy's getting in trouble in New York.
Yep.
The mafia is going to take him out. And so they send him to L.A. for his own safety. So let's catch up with our friend Bugsy in Los Angeles. The mafia has a pretty good exchange program set up, actually. They send him out there, and they connect Bugsy with a man named Jack Dragna. Mm-hmm. Jack is a Los Angeles family boss who's running the West Coast gambling rackets. And as soon as Bugsy hits LA, maybe. Mm-hmm. Yep. He starts recruiting his own team to help out.
Oh, doing a really good job of laying low. I appreciate this.
Yeah. Nice. Yes, definitely. Soon Jack Dragna gets a message from Lucky Luciano, our old friend. Now, Lucky is in prison right now, but he gets a message out anyway because that's how it works. And he tells Dragna that it's, quote, in his best interest to cooperate with Bugsy.
Oh.
And Dragna knows that Bugsy has a reputation for violence. Mm-hmm. He also sees Bugsy recruiting his own men, including a guy named Mickey Cohen, who is already at this point pretty well known to be a serious gangster in L.A., who will eventually go on to be a very serious gangster in L.A. And so Jack Dragna is looking at the landscape here. He does not like what he sees. So he tells Bugsy, he's like, you know what? I have a crazy idea. Why don't you run this gambling? Why don't you take over? You have everything. Oh, you run the gambling ring.
Okay. Retire now. I'm just going to retire right now.
I'm just going to retire.
I like
please,
this.
Please. And Bugsy says, I don't mind if I do. So he steps in. Jack Dragna works for Bugsy now. So within about 1 week, Bugsy Siegel takes over the entire West Coast gambling racket. He also uses these connections to establish a drug trade route from Mexico that starts sending drugs as far away as Chicago.
Oh,
Al Capone's friends.
That's where that came from. I was wondering where drugs came from.
Mm-hmm. Mexico. The bookmaking racket, I mean, just explodes under Bugsy's leadership. By 1942, they're making $500,000 a day on bookmaking, which is about $10 million. Every day today. Bugsy also controls several offshore casinos. He has a major prostitution ring. What?
Offshore casinos?
I don't know. I don't know where they are.
Explain this. Is this just like
out there?
Is this like a boat with a slot machine sitting out in the harbor or something like that?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. They might be international. He's going to go international a second, so it could be that.
Okay.
It could be just, yeah. It could be just a rig that they put some craps tables on, and they push it out there. A little tugboat action. That's lucrative. He also has a major prostitution ring, and he stays out of jail by making friends with politicians and powerful businessmen. And he buys some land in Hollywood. He keeps close company with a lot of movie stars, including Clark Gable and Cary Grant. Fun fact.
Wham!
That's really loud. Jean Harlow becomes the godmother to his daughter, Millicent.
Oh, hey.
Yeah. He's making all kinds of cool friends. He also met a lot of socialites, including a woman named the Countess Dorothy DiFrazzo. And that friendship...
Mm-hmm.
You can't see it on the podcast. I'm winking.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They're friends.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That brings him to Italy in 1938, where Bugsy meets Benito Mussolini. and apparently they liked each other quite a lot. While he's there for an extended period of time, and while he's over there, he also meets Hermann Göring and Joseph Goebbels.
Okay. So just the full all-star team.
Yes. Now, he doesn't like the Germans. He meets them and thinks they are terrible.
Right. Yes. But Mussolini,
he's a peach.
he got caught up in a lot of stuff he had nothing to do with.
Nah, he's Italian. You're not going to turn your back on your family, huh? He doesn't like the Germans, though, and he dislikes them so much that he at one point offers to kill them, to kill Göring and Goebbels, which I think we should have taken him up on.
This is a great opportunity, if you have a time machine, to not get your hands dirty. Because that's problem. Right. You know, you don't want to go back and then get, you know.
No one wants to kill baby Hitler.
Right.
Because that's, you can't, it's hard to kill a baby.
But you,
I mean, it's easy to kill a baby.
You go back, it's, obviously, yeah.
Yeah.
But you go back to this time period with a suitcase full of cash and a note. And you're done. Done deal.
You're done. Murder, Inc. is there. Mm-hmm. Take care of it for you and for humanity. He did not kill them because the Countess pleaded for him not to make any trouble.
Oh, that she's a real villain here. Trouble. She's the villain.
Yeah, I think so. Women, of course. She is. They always are. Apparently, in 1939, Mussolini paid Bugsy $40,000 to blow some shit up in America, which Bugsy agreed to do. He takes the money. Mm-hmm. But he, quote, failed to detonate the explosive. And so Mussolini demanded his money back.
He's making $10 million a day gambling, but he's taken $40,000 to do a political hit job from Benito Mussolini in the U.S.? Yeah. Okay, sure. Yeah.
It's just exciting. I don't think he's a particularly sane kind of person.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
I think he's. I think he's. His nickname is well earned.
And you're gonna pay me too? What for? Oh my
God. So he's making friends all over the world, which is fun. He goes back to Hollywood, and the racket is still going on. He's still making just so much money, and he has a new idea how to make even more money. He's gonna start extorting the movie studios.
This makes sense. They have all the money.
Mm-hmm.
They're right there in your backyard.
He takes over the local trade unions, and then he has them stage strikes at all the studios until the studios pay him off. And then he also starts borrowing money from celebrities without ever having any intention of paying them back.
Mm-hmm.
Because he knows they're never going to ask for it back.
Right.
Because two reasons. Number one, they are terrified of him. They don't want to get murdered. And number two, they hang out with him, but they don't want to be seen. Like, they don't want to be in the press having dealt with. Everyone knows he's in the mob.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So he just like asks them to borrow money, and they're too afraid to say no. So they give it to him, and he's like, thanks. And then just never gives it back. Let's see. During his first year in Hollywood, he receives more than $400,000 in loans from movie stars. Which is about $8 million today. It's great. So this is all going on. Obviously, the police, like, again, they know he's a gangster. They would very much like to put him in jail.
Mm.
But he's pretty careful. So he's not slipping up. They can never pin anything on him. But the police get a little excited when a man named Harry Big Greeny Greenberg...
Mm-hmm.
offers to become a police informant against the entire West Coast gambling racket.
Oh, Okay.
Which is a terrible idea.
This story sounds like it's going to end pretty quick.
You'll never guess what happens to Big Greenie next. On November 22nd, 1939, Bugsy, along with, Whitey Krakow, Frankie Garbo, and Albert Tenenbaum, they kill Big Greenie outside his Hollywood Hills apartment.
Oh, well.
Yeah. He had it coming. Boom. The police catch Tenenbaum, and he confesses and agrees to testify against Bugsy.
Ooh.
Because they don't want Tenenbaum. They want Bugsy.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, all right, I'll do it. And just like that, Bugsy is finally arrested and put on trial in September of 1941. While he's being tried, Bugsy goes to prison. And his prison time was pretty rough. He refused to eat prison food.
Well, yeah, here's gross.
Yeah, and so instead they brought in catered meals for him. He was also allowed female visitors whenever he wanted and was granted leave some days. Some reporters even wrote that Bugsy had a valet while he was in prison. Just go do his errands for him. Bugsy got pretty angry about some of the reporting, including the fact that they published his nickname, Bugsy, which he was not happy with. He didn't like it and preferred to be called either Ben or Mr. Siegel.
That was catchy.
And while he was on trial, Bugsy told one Hollywood reporter named Floribel Muir, quote, "You think because I'm locked up here, a punk like you can write anything you please. Maybe you won't be using that typewriter anymore. Maybe your fingers won't be on your hands. I have people outside who will break your legs or drop you in a hole if I say the word." So he's being pretty subtle about it.
Yeah.
Bugsy hires an attorney named Jerry Giesler for his defense, and together the two of them come up with a pretty strong defense strategy, which is murdering the state witnesses. Two of whom end up dead on very short notice here. No additional witnesses come forward after that
point. Oh.
And then Tenenbaum's testimony is dismissed because they poke some holes in it.
Mm-hmm.
And he can't remember some of the details.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's no more evidence against Bugsy.
Oh, no.
And he's a free man. And he leaves prison and he's free to go. Gosh. Where did I just lost this? Bugsy is free. Oh, here we go. But his reputation is going downhill.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's messing with foreign dictators. He's getting sloppy with his hits. He gets arrested for bookmaking eventually. So he beats the charges, but still, the cops are getting better at picking him up.
Mm-hmm.
He also stops reporting to the Chicago Mafia,
who
he's in the drug trade with. He owes him some money at this point, and he announces to some colleagues that he was running the California syndicate all by himself, and that he would give Chicago their money, quote, in his own good time.
Hmm.
Which is pretty much how you want to handle
the mafia.
It's all pretty bad. And soon it becomes obvious to Bugsy that he has to get his shit together and fix his image, or else the Chicago mob they're going to take him out.
Right.
So we can't go back to New York. Chicago's looking bad. He's coming up against some hard times here. So he goes where we all go when we need to start a brand new chapter in life. Las Vegas, Nevada.
Mm.
Bugsy, do you want to make any jokes or anything while I read this? Or you just want to?
About Las Vegas? I don't know. It's a pretty serious pretty good place.
Yeah.
I don't want to.
Just checking. I feel like I'm just I'm reading very quickly. I slow down? Am I stepping over things?
No, I just it's taking me a long time to process all the words. They're going by so fast.
Okay. I'll go a little slower. So Bugsy, he's pretty familiar with the Vegas, the whole Vegas area.
Las Vegas! The City of Lights.
There's my boy. He's back. He's done some business there in the past. Including he provided some, quote, illicit services to construction crews while they built the Hoover Dam.
Oh, I didn't know he liked that. That's kind of, whatever. It's his deal.
I'm so surprised to hear it. I didn't write this down, but in the article I read, they didn't call it the Hoover Dam. They called it the something else, the Boulder Dam. And I was like, what's the Boulder Dam? And it's a Hoover Dam. But I guess Roosevelt, after Hoover, they named it in honor of Hoover, of course. And then later, Roosevelt came along, and I guess he hated Hoover. And he's like, we're not calling it that. We're calling it the Boulder Dam. So they called it the Boulder Dam for a few years until he left office, and they're like, actually, we're going to call it the Hoover Dam again.
We got a lot of pamphlets printed here and cannot afford the whiteout.
Very, very Gulf of America feeling here. Anyway, so 1946, Bugsy moves out to Vegas full-time. He goes into business with William Wilkerson. And Wilkerson is planning to build a casino called the Flamingo Hotel.
Oh, I know that one.
It's a good one. It's an oldie but a goodie. The plan is that Bugsy is basically going to be in charge of operations. He's going to oversee the gambling and the food and the liquor and the entertainment.
Ah, yeah. I took him to be a foodie. That makes sense to me. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great taste. Pretty quickly, Bugsy decides, actually, he should just own all the Flamingo.
That makes sense.
I think everyone agrees. So Wilkerson decides to sell his entire stake in the hotel under the threat of death. And that poor bastard is so scared of Bugsy that he sells him all his shares and then goes into hiding in Paris for a few months, just in case. But now, so Bugsy takes over the whole project, and the Flamingo becomes a fully mafia-run hotel and casino. So it's still being built. Bugsy goes absolutely wild on this thing. By October 1946, the costs are already at over $6 million, or about $73 million today. And it's only about half finished. Bugsy was, he was pretty excited to be building a casino in Vegas. Who wouldn't be? And he would brag to everybody about how he was a mobster and how he'd killed so many people. Apparently, this really concerned Del Webb, who was overseeing construction at the time. Del said, or Bugsy said to him, Del, don't worry. We only kill each other. Which I think, if you know anything about the mafia, is 100% untrue.
Yeah. It's the mafia. There's no such thing as collateral damage. It's just just guys. Guys being
just guys. Being guys.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. So the Flamingo opens on December 26, 1946. Now, at this point, the construction on the hotel is not done.
Sure.
It's not even close to done. But
we need a revenue stream real bad.
Real bad. Bugsy wants it to open for the holiday traffic, and the contractor tells him, he's like, it's very unfinished. Bugsy doesn't care, he wants it open. So they open the Flamingo the day after Christmas. Guests walk in to find a lobby that's covered in drop cloths, and they could hear the construction noise at all hours of the night.
Look, you want to sleep or do you want it done? How's your choices here?
So people, they don't like this. They start complaining, and they don't gamble much. They're going mostly to other casinos to do their gambling because it's very annoying to be there. And the Flamingo instantly starts losing money.
Oh.
Bugsy gets big mad, and he starts verbally abusing the guests and threatening them that they can't go gamble somewhere else. They have to gamble here. He also throws out at least one family. So, Merry Christmas. The Yuletide spirit is alive and well in the spirit of Bugsy Siegel. After 2 weeks, the Flamingo is down $275,000, which is several million today. And so the mob steps in. They shut it down. They're like, Bugsy, you're going to finish this fucking hotel before you try to run this shit. So back to construction, and then it takes a few more months, but on March 1st, 1947, the Flamingo reopens, and this time it's done.
Okay.
This time they're ready. And it turns a profit. But the problem for Bugsy is, this is the last straw for the mob. He's causing too much trouble, and on the night...
So, hang on. So, this dude has killed hundreds of people, stolen tens of millions of dollars from people.
Yeah.
But hospitality is what does him in? Seriously? Like
that's It's even dumber than tax evasion. It's a lot of work to be in food service.
I guess.
It's a lot of work. So let's see, on the night of June 20th, 1947, Bugsy, he's back in Beverly Hills. He's sitting on a sofa reading a copy of the Los Angeles Times. He's got a few friends over.
Mm-hmm.
There's vibing.
Wait, he has friends over and he's reading the newspaper?
Yeah.
What an asshole.
It's a vibe.
That's such an asshole thing to do.
No, it's a power move. In the LA Times, be serious. So a little before 11 p.m., someone creeps up to the driveway of the house and hides himself in the shadow of an archway there. The visitor sets a barrel of a 30-caliber M1 carbine rifle on a trellis just a few feet away from the living room window. The gunman fires 9 shots, quote, 4 of which found their mark. One hit the bridge of Siegel's nose and ripped out his left eye. A second entered his right cheek and exited at the back of his neck, and 2 hit him in the chest.
Well, let's see him get out of this one.
Can't wait to see how he pulls it off. Ironically, one of the first reporters on the scene was Floribel Muir, the reporter that Bugsy had threatened to cut her fingers off and stuff. So she's on the scene, and she finds Bugsy's eyeball lying on the ground. And, quote, picked up the... She wrote that she, quote, picked up the sliver of flesh from which his long eyelashes extended. So who's got the last laugh, Bugsy?
Certainly not the LAPD. I mean, people can't just pick up stuff from the crime scene. What the fuck is going on here?
Reporter, get out of here. Can't be in here.
You don't even have gloves on.
Get it out of your mouth. What are you doing? It's not safe. You could choke. The forensic specialist concludes that there were probably 2 shooters, but we're not sure because no one was ever charged. And the murder of Bugsy Siegel remains unsolved to this day. The day after the murder, the Los Angeles Herald Express published a front page photograph from the morgue of Bugsy's bare right foot with a toe tag. I have a picture of this, but I don't.
It could be anybody's right foot.
It could be anyone's right foot.
Yeah.
Wait, maybe I do have one. Yeah, you want to see it?
Yes.
Oof. Oh, God. Okay. Well, you asked for it. Let's see. It's amazing what you can find on the internet. Okay, so there's...
Oh, okay.
You tell me that's anyone's right foot. Come on. That's Bugsy's. And then in case you're wondering what his head looked like after this, it's that.
Oh, yeah, okay. So there are some missing pieces. That's fine.
Yeah. Should I keep going?
Very tasteful.
Yeah. These guys shooting craps at the funeral, I guess. I don't know. Pretty good. Anyway, that's Bugsy's foot. All right. Let's see. That was worth the detour for sure. Where are we here? Fun fact.
Wham!
In Mario Puzo's The Grandfather.
I prefer The Grandfather 3.
In his book and movie The Godfather, the character Mo Green is fictional, but he is directly based on Bugsy Siegel.
Huh.
That's something I learned. Anyway, if you go to the Flamingo Hotel today, still standing there, you'll see a plaque honoring Bugsy between the pool and the wedding chapel because he did such a great job.
Yeah. Welcome to the one thing he did in the whole hotel.
You will also find the ghost of Bugsy still wandering around.
Oh.
Hotel guests consistently report seeing a ghostly figure in the garden dressed in a smoking jacket, looking remarkably like Bugsy Siegel, and he likes to stand right next to his memorial plaque in case anyone wants a picture or an autograph or something. You may also find Bugsy wandering inside the hotel, pacing in front of the doors of the presidential suite, which was his room. And sometimes he's even seen inside that suite wearing his smoking jacket again and appearing in the bathroom standing next to the green toilet that apparently he loved so well.
Green is not a good color for a toilet. That is...
No. I feel like it must be like one of those avocado green toilets.
I don't know if that makes it any better.
So gross. And that is the story of Bugsy Siegel in the Flamingo Hotel. I will tell you, I will admit that when I first started researching this, I was like, I didn't look in to see how much haunting was involved.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, it's a Flamingo Hotel. There's going to be lots of ghosts. Mm-hmm. So I started doing the research on Bugsy because he was going to be the big one. Mm-hmm. And then there was so much about Bugsy. And I got to the end and I was like, all right, now let's get to the ghosts. Yeah. And it's like, and he sometimes hangs out by a plaque. So I do apologize to everyone who just sat through two full episodes of this show for a very small amount of ghost content. But that's how it goes sometimes. Mm-hmm. Take the good, take the bad.
Sometimes it's a ghost. Sometimes it's not.
Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's many ghosts. Sometimes it's just little ghost, little Bugsy ghost. But I think it was it's not about the destination, mm-hmm. as they say. It's the journey.
Exactly.
And we had quite a journey.
Mm-hmm.
We learned grateful that
we learned who is an executive member and who isn't.
That is the most important part of today's episode.
Hopefully that stays in the episode. Otherwise, this would make no sense.
Uh-huh. Well, that it feels a little anticlimactic, doesn't it? But that's our show today.
No, it feels great.
Let's see. Any questions, any concerns, any thoughts that you want to share about Bugsy?
No. I'm very excited to learn that the Bugsy I thought this was about the entire time was just a fictional movie character named Bugsy Malone.
Yeah, I did recall that there is a movie called Bugsy that's somewhat based on this Bugsy starring Warren Beatty.
Oh.
Oh. I think it's quite fictionalized.
Yeah.
From what I see. Yeah.
I'll go watch that one too. I'll watch them both.
Yeah. So then just choose which one you like more, and that's our guy. Well, this has been fun. And I hope you all agree. Thanks for coming on this journey with us. Next time, we're going to do a bowling alley ghost for sure. And if I can't find one, I'm going to make one up. It's going to be really, really good. And a huge payoff. So many ghosts. In the meantime, Is This a Ghost is a production of Smith Show Media. All the notes were taken by me, Clayton Smith. All the funny jokes are from Patrick Dean. Our audio editor is Jeremy Montoya. Our video editor and website master is Jen Swanson. Our social media team is Sam Murdoch and Jen Jones these days, I believe. And our merch is handled by Fox and Quill Studio. Go check them out and go check it out on our website as well. And that will do it for the Bugsy Siegel saga. Don't go to Vegas. Stay out of Vegas, or you might see very few ghosts. And it will be so scary.